first your name, your parents' name, and about, so when we start the tape, we have all about you first.
Right.
Your name, your parents' name, where you're born, and when you came to Canada.
My parents were Modeste Deleu, and my mother was Cordula Buckstall. I'm born out of a family of 12. The oldest two girls, and then the youngest 10 boys. And I happened to be the 10th child that was two younger than myself. And today, I'm the only one alive. I came to Canada, to St. Boniface in 1906. And there were already two brothers in St. Boniface then, who came there in 1904. Then I was 20 years old then, and I married my wife, Selina Van Damme, who came to Canada from France in 1904. 1907. And we got married in 1910 on the 10th of June. And we had our 50th wedding anniversary in the same church where we were married, the St. Boniface Cathedral. We had again our 60th wedding anniversary in 1960. And we have three children myself, one son, Harry, and Yvonne, and Alain, married in St. Boniface. We have 12 grandchildren and 16 great-grandchildren today. We always have lived in St. Boniface.
The Schmierer Street.
And all mostly on the Schmierer Street. The first job I did in St. Boniface was building the tower on the City Hall. Also the tower on the Fire Hall. And made a gymnasium room on the top of Provence School, under the roof. What's burned down now. I also built the Belgium Club in 1907. And I've been in the building game all the time. And employed as many as from 100 to 150 people in the building game. The biggest building I put up was the King George School in Norwood. I built quite a number of schools, and then went into the house building and apartment blocks. Also went in the builder supply business, and I employed thousands of people, mostly French Canadians, that came in from outside of Winnipeg and St. Boniface by car from Lorette, Saint-Anne, Saint-Pierre, Saint-Malo, Saint-Jean-Baptiste. The majority were always French Canadian employed and Belgians. Quite English people mixed into it. When I came to St. Boniface in 1906, there was no sewers, there was no waterworks, there was no paving, all were mud roads. And there was about 20 wooden pumps in St. Boniface. And everybody had to go for his water to those pumps. Pumps were in different districts of St. Boniface. And there wasn't very much at that time in St. Boniface. St. Boniface was a very poor district. Improvements were not there, nothing. But today, St. Boniface is a wonderful place. And I lived there, we lived there now 66 years, and we still like it very much.
Mr. DeLue, was the Belgian church up when you came?
No.
Do you know how they got together and made a Belgian church? Who got me to do that? Bunch of you people?
Well, me and Ma were away. I was building a consolidated school in Fox Warren at that time. And the year that they built the Belgian church, I had nothing to do with it. I wasn't here. But ever since, I got so friendly, I don't know why, I can't understand it. I was so friendly with the Belgian priests, even 5 or 6 or 7. And she was running there in the school?
The ladies, auxiliary.
And I don't know why those priests always, when there was anything to build or anything to do, they just wanted me. I would never want anybody else. And I did everything, that grotto that was there and everything, I built it off a postcard for them. But St. Boniface really went ahead with the church. And the parochial church is doing very, very good. All priests that have been here up to now are doing very good.
Mr. DeLue, where did you learn to your contracting?
Well, I was what you call a wheelwright. A wheelwright is a tradesman that can make all kinds of wheels and buggies and all things like that, see? So it's no different with a carpenter, so I was a carpenter. When I come to Canada and I start building, and then I was a contractor, I made pretty good, I made very good. The first house I built on this Muren Street was between Amo and the next street here. And that land all belonged to the Archbishop of St. Boniface. And outside, everywhere, pretty well, all the land. But through the bad times that came, the church and the Archbishop let most of the land go on account of there was taxes on all that land. And as soon as the taxes started to get up, they let that land go. But all this land belonged to the church. There was a convent just across the street here, just across the street of this mural, just on this block here. There was an Indian industrial school there, quite a big building, all big. There was 100 students there of Indian descent. And that school, I was going to go to do a little job at City Hall, some trades work. And I looked through the window while I was there and I saw it burning here. And I, I told them at the City Hall, I says, I got to go home. I think my house is on fire because that was the only house that was here, the one I was building. And the cattle were still in there and I put the water in the barrels to make concrete, you see. And I was only building that at night. I didn't take the time off during the day, and I had a couple of fellows to help me. So the first day we filled the barrels all up for to use at night, and when we come at night there wasn't a drop of water left in it. The cattle had all drunk the barrels empty. So then the next day I filled the barrels up and I brought a bag along to put over the top in a little steel belt. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm not going to get it. So instead of my house burning, it was the industrial school, and it was a big place. Oh, it was a beautiful place.
Was it run by the Catholics?
It was run by the fathers.
The fathers?
Yeah. These fathers here on the Oblique? End of the street?
The Oblique
fathers, yeah. And they bought that place over at the corner. They didn't rebuild.
Did they have a fire department when that fire in those days?
Oh yeah, oh, yeah. Fire department. Oh yeah, they had a fire department. Yes. But they had no water.
But nobody was hurt.
Nobody was hurt. No. Mm-hmm. Even there was after this fire, it's only the main building that burned. Mm-hmm. All the other buildings didn't burn. So then
fire brigade was with horses.
Gilbo bought that place. And he asked me if I would move all those other buildings and make houses out of them. So I built 10 houses out of them without taking them apart. I built 10 houses on Uville with that. And these houses are still there today.
Oh, yes.
So that...
You moved them all?
I moved them all. I moved them across the railway track and I never took a permit. I just went across the track and moved them all.
There weren't many rules in those days.
No. So that things were not very rosy then. It was pretty bad, very bad. And gradually they come and they build new sewers, new water mines, new sidewalks, new... came slow, and then we had the bad times, and then we had the war, and the land, at one time the land was down that you wouldn't get a dollar for one lot. And then later on you got same lot selling at $1,500, $2,000, same lot, you see. There was quite a depression. Twice we had this that depression since in here. But things have come pretty good.
How did the people get together to build a club, the Belgian Club?
Oh, that, we were members all. You see, the minute we arrived from Belgium, that was the first thing we did. You became a member of the Belgian Club. And all you had to pay was then $1 to be a shareholder and $1 entry fee. So you had to pay $2. That club then had about 2,000 members already then. And they decided, we were renting on Provence, where close to Tassé, in that block of old houses, the old suites and things that were there. Suites on the top and all stores at the bottom.
The old Dubuque block?
No, there was no Dubuque. Dubuque got that after the fire.
Oh, yeah.
So the Dubuque bought that land and then put the Dubuque block up. But before that, that was owned by La Montagne or something. La Montagne, who was in the brickyard business here with Marion, they owned that. But the book was lawyers, and they decided to buy that, and they put a block up there. So that the art club was then, the post office was there too. You see, there was no post office in Sabonville. They just rented one store there. And the Belgian Club rented the store and a half, the back of the post office and the one store. So the club was there for 5-6 years, and then decided to build, and I took the contract to build it. I was only 20 years old, but I took the contract to build it. They built that same year as I built the tower at the City Hall.
Was that quite a job? No, like that tower at City Hall, was there an architect designed that, or did
you? Oh, yes, that was Harwood, an Englishman, that designed that, but they were supposed to put clocks in it, but it never came about. They never put the clocks in. There's still their own glasses out there, but there's never been a clock put in. A watch or a, what do you call it, whatever
clock.
You call it.
Tower, yeah.
Tower.
And they did say the City Hall was already built.
Hall was already built 2 or 3 years. Uh-huh. And when they put this tower on, they left that open, see, and then they gave me the job to put the tower on. But I enjoyed all the time I was in Canada, mostly in St. Barnabas. I like St. Barnabas very much, and my wife likes it too.
Tell me, what brought your family to St. Barnabas? Was there advertising, or did somebody come over and tell you?
Well, I had one brother married, and he was serving in Brussels, in a castle. He was like what you call there, help that horses did it, riding horses,
and that.
And his wife was the chief cook there in that castle for this family. And my brother went to Belgium. He had already been here for 5 years. And was 20 years of age, he had to go back to Belgium to do his military duty. So he went and done his military duty. When he was finished with his military duty, he married this woman, and then the two of them decided to come to Canada, and they brought a young brother, younger than me, who was a butcher. And he come to St. Boniface. He was only 18 years old, 17 I think. And he come to St. Boniface, and he did the butcher trade, and he worked first for J.B. Lujan, an old family of St. Boniface. From there he went to Burns Abattoir, that was then run by La France, by three other people. And from Lujan he went to Burden's Abattoir as chief slaughter man on the killing floor. And he was killed there.
Is that so?
He got in an accident and he got with his leg between the lead of the elevator and the lead of the platform, who was opening up with two doors when the elevator came up.
Old staff.
And he got squeezed in there and lost a leg. But he bleeded so much that he died 12 hours after the accident. And he was very good. He had amputated his leg and he was very good. And he said, I'm going to be all right. It's all right. I lost my leg.
Not blood enough,
so he died. This other brother that came with him and who was married and had two sons, he went to Edmonton. And then these two came together, and he got into an accident. He had a contract to haul all the gravel for the Parliament buildings of Edmonton, about 30,000 yards. And he hauled it with all his horses. And they had to help each other, each two teams had to help each other pull up with four horses, one sleigh over the hill. And one sleigh was a little bit behind in loading. So he grabbed the shovel himself and he helped loading. And as he's helped loading, a big chunk of frozen gravel came down, hit him, and he fell on the edge of the sleigh. And that there were wooden sleighs all that time, you know, wooden planks on the side. And he fell just with his front part between the legs right on top of the edge of that sleigh. And he got about five tons of frozen gravel on top of it. When they took him out, he was also squeezed to nothing here and there, amputated his leg too. And he also died 12 hours after. See? So,
things weren't so safe in those days.
No, and not only that, there was no workman's compensation, there was nothing. They wouldn't even look after and pay for the burial. They wouldn't do nothing, absolutely nothing. They made you all kinds of promises when they were still alive. Of giving them a job and see that they wouldn't be short of nothing or anything. But this was in Edmonton at the contract there, you see. So then anybody dying or in an accident, that was your own medicine. Nobody cared about that. You just killed
yourself. You can easily see why unions came along.
But that's, and everything. The workman's compensation is one of the best things. But that was all much before that, what I'm talking about.
But you can see why those things came.
Well, he's talking about this 160 years ago.
This country was not developed the way it should have been, you see. Also, education was very poor here, and they were like small, wee bit of a school, nothing here in St. Boniface. And this was then 100% French. You could go to 20 houses, and nobody would talk English to you. There was no English here.
You couldn't talk English.
There was all French. Well, yeah, English is easy for a Belgian. A Belgian has no trouble learning English. He doesn't talk perfect, but it's easy to know.
Sure.
Because mostly it's the same. I can tell you in a minute, 1,000 words, and they're all exactly the same as the English language, the Flemish. So, it didn't take me. We had no trouble getting. You never had no trouble learning English.
No. Tell me, when they had this 1919 strike in Winnipeg, you didn't have anything to do with it, most veterans?
No, I was then building a dance hall for the CPR in Winnipeg Beach, big dance hall. I was coming back to her at 11 to 12 o'clock at night. I was coming in by train to Winnipeg Station. Coming home from there, I walked on Main Street. I was stopped. Right as it Main Street was stopped. They told me, you can't go through here. I had to go around and make a turn around by back of Portage, all the way to Osborne, and then come back by Osborne, and then back to the Red River Bridge, and over the bridge, and come home. What I forgot to tell you, that the bridge we had then on Provence was an old bridge, all made out of steel over, but not too safe. And the that bridge belonged to a syndicate. And a person that walked across had to pay 2 cents. And any wagon going over with horses had to pay 15 cents. Then, when Blow was mayor of St. Boniface, they decided to buy the bridge. And they paid quite a price for that bridge. And then nobody had to pay nothing anymore. You understand? Then, as you all know, they tore that bridge down and built a new one. And they built a new one in Norwood at the same time. Foley Brothers took the contract to build those two bridges, and from what I knew, that he lost about $400,000 on the two bridges. Then he sued the city for extra, and the city of St. Boniface went to court, and the city won. Then they were still going to the British courts. You know, well, Canada.
The High
Court was in Britain. So then they took it to Britain, to the court in London, and the city won again. And the Foley Brothers lost all that money. Whether they were entitled to this extra or something, I don't know. I don't know that. But everybody had to pay to go across to Winnipeg at that time. 2 cents walking, 15 cents with any kind of a wagon or anything, you had a buggy or anything.
Mr. DeLue, did you work in any of these clubs that the Belgians started? Were you on any of these founding clubs like the Archery or any of those organizations?
I was never at the Archery, but I was at the Belgian club because I took the contract. We were then six brothers, members of the Belgian club at that time. So that I built the club, and with the church, I done most of all building around the cemetery and around the club, most of all, including the grotto that they tore down later.
When I came back to St. Boniface, you built all these Marian apartments.
Yes.
How many did you build there?
I had 24. We owned 24. This is the biggest mistake I ever made in my life. We made a terrible mistake. Then the same year I built the blocks, we built 100 houses that year too, 100. And what I found the best was that when I come here and I build a few houses, and we had lots of trucks, cars, and houses, the first thing I looked for was to be made an agent of fire insurance. And car insurance and truck insurance. So I got that job as an insurance agent. Even if it was only for all my own, you understand? Didn't have to pay nothing. So then the government later on gave 1% to any agent that had to do with building a house, building an apartment block, building anything of new buildings to provide work for Canada, for the people. And as an agent, he had to be an agent to be able to get that. So then, out of all these blocks, I got 1%. Out of all the houses, I got 1%. I got the profit of the fire insurance. The fire insurance averages 30% profit. Then, I learned so much that I bought this land here, and I put my hardware store on there, and our office, and I put a sawmill up there, and handled the lumber, and put the railway track in it, because you didn't have to go anywhere else to go and unload. We loaded right there. I tell you what the wisest move I made was, have a building supply business. Then, if I wanted a carload of lime, I got a quarter off in price. If I need the car of cement, I got a quarter off. If I need a car of plasterboard, I got a quarter off. So that money making is so easy if a person uses his head and knows what to do.
And tell you where you get the insurance to.
Yeah, and all these people, we built the house, we sold the house, and we told the people the house is already insured, so you get the insurance, see? So that they have to pay, and after I had done that for so long, and my son was playing hockey in the States.
So he had it.
And when he quit playing hockey, Danny told him, you're going to run this insurance business, and you're going to run this business with me. And we made a lot of money, and too bad I sold it, because we would have made millions through an arrangement. Because if I built 24 blocks in 100 houses, I didn't have to buy $1 from anybody, not even a quart of paint, or not even a plate for dinner room, or kettle, or anything, or stove, or fridge. We didn't have to buy nothing except what we bought wholesale in our store, and then ship it over there, see?
Was that where the bicycle track was, or the other side of the bicycle track?
No.
No, on this side of the bicycle track. Oh, yeah. We got part of the bicycle track. I bought 100 feet extra there. That was part of the bicycle track. That's all part of
all the bicycle.
That was all part of the school industrial that was there.
It wasn't.
You see what happened? When they first come here, I went to the Archbishop of St. Boniface and told him I want to buy a lot on this Muir Street. Well, he says, before we can sell you a lot, we want to know what you are in religion and how are you in religion and all this kind of stuff. You see, St. Boniface was put backwards by default of the clergy, because St. Boniface wouldn't be Winnipeg today if it hadn't been for that. But the first archbishops we had here, they wouldn't sell any land to English-speaking people, Protestants mostly, or any other body who was not a Catholic. He couldn't buy a lot at that time. So I bought a lot there and built the first house, and then I bought another one.
On this Muir Street.
But then the Depression came, and the lots, the tax bill on a lot was already $56. So on all of that land that belonged to the Archbishop, they let that go. They let it all go. You see, they didn't hold it no more. They wouldn't sell it to the people that they didn't like. But then they let it go because on account of the expense.
So, who was the Archbishop then?
Bellevue. You see, they own the land all outside the pastor's stockyard, all over there. They own the land. They own all that land along the Grand Trunk there, because they had a chapel there. The College of St. Boniface had got a section of land there that all land was given to the clergy. And they built the chapel there. And it was also the house of the priests that were there around the college farm. And that building was right in the middle of the track of the Grand Trunk. And the Grand Trunk couldn't come in. They had the track laid on one side and they had the track laid on the other side, but the house was still standing there. So then they came to me and they asked me if I would move it, because they seen me moving all these other buildings here. And they came to me and said, well, would you move it? I said, yes, I'll move it. So they told me, go ahead and move it. But this was the hardest thing I ever did in all my life. It was quite a big, big building, big house, and they had filled it all in between the studs with brick, and I didn't know that. And when you come to lift it up, it was a terrible thing. I broke everything. I broke all the tools I put on there. But in the end, it's tied with one cabestrang. A cabestrang is with a horse that goes around with a long pole, and a man sits there and he holds a cable on there, and as the horse go around, he just keeps on pulling the cable in. Well, I couldn't move it with one, so then I put another one up. I put two on each side, and then I had oak rollers that were turned, big rollers about that thick, all the same thickness, and put these rollers on, but all the rollers squeezed to pieces. It was so heavy that it squeezed all these oak rollers to pieces. And lucky, the father had a couple cars of tamarack lumber there, wood there, burning wood. So I told him, I says, I'm going to grab some of these rollers and put 10 instead of 5, or put 15 instead of 10. And we'll take off the load, we'll help the load a little bit. And then I pulled it across with the two cabestrang, with two horses, one horse going around all the time, goes around, and the cable is at the bottom and the horse steps over it. And that, I succeeded to move it. but took me 2-3 days extra.
How many horses did you use in the whole job? Just the two?
Two, just the two.
And they pulled it to wherever you wanted it?
Where I wanted it, yeah. Where I wanted it, where they wanted to set it. And they had to go across a creek that was about 7 or 8 feet wide. But then I put timbers across. That was nothing for me to run. And once I start running, it runs pretty good.
Where'd you take it to?
Just on, off the land, off the, up there on land. But the track was coming through, double track was coming through the college farm. Mm-hmm. So the house been right in the middle. The house been right in the middle of the track. The Grand Trunk couldn't pull the railroad through till I moved it off.
Well, the Grand Trunk, the Grand Trunk was not the shipyard.
Oh no, the Grand Trunk. That was the Grand Trunk.
Yeah, right.
Transcontinental, they called it too. They had an office on Provence in the new college apart block there. You know that block on the corner of Old now that burned down. Where the Royal Bank was before, you remember that, when the Royal Bank was there. Well, on this side, before it was a show, the Transcontinental had their office in there. And this is a block that was built while I was here. And the Royal Bank was in the far corner, in the far end, on Olo. But then it was not the Royal Bank, it was the Northern Bank. Then, year after, it was Northern Crown Bank. They took over the Crown Bank. Then another 2 years after, it was the Royal Bank of Canada. See? Well, I've been in the bank for 66 years. I'm the oldest customer in the St. Bonaventure Bank. I opened an account there in 1906. And I, even if I was only 20 years old, I did very, very good. But I worked like a slave, too. I used to work in the daytime on contracts I had, and then at night I built our house, and she helped me quite a bit. She was holding the lamp. There was no electric lights, so you had to hold the lamp. And the electric lights came right after that. And then I built another house the next year. I found it so good to build a house on spare time that next year I built another one. When I was 10 years married, I owned 10 houses. No mortgage.
That's something. There was no income tax either.
Three on Lismuron, 7 on Lamarney.
That's marvelous.
And then they came, the war came, they were not worth 5 cents, they were not worth nothing no more. So Ma kept telling me, why the dickens you want to bother about those houses and go and get the rent, and now since you went into business, you borrowed some money on it to help financial better. Ah, she says, let them go. And I let each house go for about $1,700 each. Today you couldn't buy them for $15,000. The same houses. So that people makes mistake. Oh, people makes mistake. I was fixing that house up on Provence there. The city, that brick house, you know, that was next to Maison Blanche.
But it's still there.
Next to the big block, there's a double brick house there.
Still there.
So they asked me, the sinking fund of St. Bonaventure asked me to repair that house. And the bill came to $1,060. When I went to get the money, they asked me, would you take the house for what we owe you? We'll give you clear title. I said, I can't do it. I need my money. I need the money. So I refused to do that. Today you couldn't buy that house for $40,000.
That's right next to Ducharme the Barber, right?
Yes.
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 And
I wouldn't take it for nothing. They just offered me for nothing. They didn't want nothing.
Well, that's easy to say, hindsight. Well, I mean, you know, those are easy to say what you could have done. Yeah. Everybody can say that. Tell me, Mr. DeVu, how did you come here? Did you come by boat and train or what when you first came to Canada?
By boat.
Yeah. Did you come from Belgium or did you go to England first?
Went to direct from Belgium up here. Took the boat in Antwerp. And to tell you something, I wish you'd know that. We came and she came too on the same trip, on the same boat, but a year later. But I didn't know her. I didn't know her. She's from France and I'm from Belgium. So we came with this boat. This boat was a beautiful boat upstairs, and we were guaranteed to have a room upstairs, you know, on top of the boat. And when we got there, this all these fellows working on the boat took me down. I was a brother with me and two other friends. And they took me down and showed me our beds, which is in the bottom of the boat.
With the horses?
And there was 2,000 Russian immigrants on there. And it smelled enough to kill you. And I was put down there, but the man that sold us, Trio de Sully, a father from South America, sold me the tickets to come on all four of us. And guaranteed that we get a room upstairs, because there was only 16 rooms. And when we got there, he took me down, his employees, they took me down. And I told them, I said, now look, our deal is for a room upstairs, and I'm not going to take this. Well, he says, you can't do nothing else, you can't get off the boat anymore, you can't do nothing, you can go where we said. Well, I says, will it help if I give you a little money? He said, yes, I'll take you back. So I gave him a few francs, he took me back upstairs, and we got our cabin, see? But the thing down below was...
Tell the name of your boat.
Montempo.
Montempo,
yeah. CPR boat. But it was so bad, it was so bad. Those people were stinking, and they were not dressing them up. And they were sitting alongside the wall
Thunder
of the
hair,
boat, and all their clothes off here, and feed the little babies there. Oh. And it looked so terrible. And all the men, with big whiskers on, dirty.
I suppose there was hardly any bathrooms there.
No. You know what
just
they
upstairs.
Did? There was toilets on the boat. But the toilets on the boat.
On the top of the
boat. One man was so afraid of the other, he just got up on the toilet, put his feet on the seat, and do it there. And there was all covered over everywhere, even on the side, everywhere. And then they came along with a big hose of the water of the sea with a pump, and they blow it out like a fire hall. That same power on water like the firemen have here.
Oh, yes.
Of the water of the sea. But dirty, oh boy, were those people dirty people. So they all had to come through Antwerp. All the Russians that come to Canada, everybody of Czechoslovakia, all those countries, they all come through Antwerp. That's in Belgium. Is the nearest place for them to get to the boat, and the sea docks there are better.
A better harbor
than anywhere else. And but then, you know, we paid $45 to come to Canada. Today, when we went back, I paid $630.
Yeah, and then where did your boat land?
In Quebec. Then we take the train from there. And we take the train and direct from the boat direct to Winnipeg. Winnipeg, we got on.
By the train?
Then a lot of people go further up west and all that by train.
Lots of
We went back, me and her, in 48, we went back to Belgium. Along
48.
With, we took French-Canadian girl, a woman with us and her husband. And. We went back by the boat, the Queen Mary. And then, was it first with the Elizabeth or the second one?
Elizabeth
first. Just turned over at the Hong Kong
first.
Harbor.
Elizabeth.
You know, she turned right over and sunk.
Elizabeth.
Beautiful big boat. Well, it's as big as from Main Street to Eaton Store, like the whole of Portland, that big. So, we got a nice ride. There's four. About 1,200 passengers, and there is 1,500 employees. So you can see how it goes.
Well, very good, though.
And then we come back.
First one with
Elizabeth. Then we come back with the Queen Mary.
Yeah.
And like the Queen Mary and the Queen Elizabeth, when they come back from England, they lay in the sea about, 300 miles this side of the English coast. and they lay there in the middle of the sea, and the French people that comes from Paris and all of France comes to Cherbourg. Cherbourg comes so far into the sea. And they come then, they come by train to Cherbourg, and then this boat waits there and anchored there, the big boat, and then the other boat comes. Oh, you can see it all the way. You can see it from the boat. You can see Cherbourg. You can see the boat coming in there, and then you see them coming out. And these two French people we along, the Belgian and the French-Canadian woman, that they went to Paris and we didn't go. But I said, I've seen Paris and I don't want to go. So we went direct back to
London.
To Ostend. And in Ostend, you take a small boat, Belgian boat, to Dover.
Dover, yeah.
Then at Dover, you take the train for London. And then we got on the boat at I know the place.
Ostend?
No. On the English, on the big boat now. We got
Dover.
No.
You want to?
No. Dover is the small boat. The small boat.
Yeah,
Manchester or anywhere up there? Liverpool?
No. I know.
You have to come with another train.
It's the biggest harbour in England.
Oh, well,
there we took the big boat and come to wait for our friends to come, and they came with a small boat, lots of other people, two from France, to join that boat. And that way we went to England, to New York. And I had relations living in New York who were at school in Belgium. But my mother's sister had four daughters and one son. And my sister went to the United States, and my brothers too, first, before they came here. And when they went back to Belgium, they brought these four girls with them, and this boy. And another sister of my mother was mother superior of a large girls' college in Belgium. And she was a nun. She was running it. And this was also her sister's children. And they went to this convent. They were raised there. And the oldest girl died there. The other three girls and the boy went back to the States. And we went through the States by car. Me and my son, my daughters, we went with two cars. We went on a holiday for a month after we sold out. And we went to see the same people, the same girls that were at my place. They passed all their school holidays at my mother's place. And I went to see them, with all of them here. And there is still one alive, her husband, and the husband of another one is still alive. But they're also all dead now. So my brothers went to the United States first, before they came to Canada. They went there when I was 4 years old. I was only 4 years when they went. This is now 83 years that they went away to the States.
What was your train ride like from Montreal here? The immigrant train,
very fast, you know, they were going very fast. Those trains had fully loaded, and they never stopped, and you got no meals. You could buy something on the train, or
No meals,
nothing. You on the train, you have to help yourself. You got to see that you had your food with you.
Yeah.
Because then there was nothing you could do. Nothing.
You didn't tell me what part of Belgium you were born.
I'm born on the edge of East Flanders. That is West Flanders, is a province. East Flanders is a province. But the last town, next to the Walloon country, French. Walloon is not a language, you know that, right?
Yeah.
Walloon is a way of speaking amongst the people. Mm-hmm. But they got no newspaper, no writing, or nothing exists. But they don't use anything else in Belgium but Walloon. And I speak Walloon just as good as I speak my English language, just the same. And because we live so close there. If we just go up to the end of the street is like Archibald there. You just go up to Archibald, and on the other side of Archibald, there isn't the word Flemish no more. It stops right on the street.
And what's the name of that place?
Scurries. Mm-hmm. And the Boxtels come from there too, because the Boxtels is exactly the same family as the Loos.
Well, you said that already.
See? Mm-hmm. Exactly the same. So they're also all there.
Well, but go on to your list now, before you get finished.
Well, it's all what I said.
No, you have to tell me about your family. Come on. About your family?
My family?
Yeah, right here, yeah, right now. Steve wants to know, don't you?
Wait a minute, let's turn it off.